everybody, it's Retropod, episode number 2. We're back. We got renewed for a whole second episode. My name's Dave Chadwick, aka Sugar Ray Dodge, and I'm here with, as always,
Gunsage.
That's it, yes, just Gunsage. Da, 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 da. We need, like, theme music, like, for each of us, how the wrestlers come out, and they have their song. Only we need to have, like, our own specialized, like, sound effects. Like how these obnoxious morning DJ, like, bad stand-up comics, how they get booed out of stand-up, so they go and they get a morning show somewhere so nobody can see their ugly face. And they can't hear people, like, cringe and boo at their dumb jokes. And they have this whole soundboard full of terrible sound effects. We need something like that for this. But anyway, I digress. So, let's jump right into this. Gunsage, have you been playing any retro games these past 2 weeks since episode 1?
I have. I just need to remember what I've been playing. What was I playing? I was actually playing a couple of, well, I guess you can consider it retro. They released Mother 3 in Japan for the Game Boy Advance. So, that's not really retro, but it is based off of Mother 2, which was Earthbound.
Yeah, so it's basically like Earthbound 2, or it's like they got something weird going on there. I don't try to understand Nintendo's reasoning on that.
Well, I know there was some sort of music licensing or something. I guess whenever they started going back over the different tracks that they used, they almost completely ripped off all kinds of different tracks and didn't credit them at all.
Oh, I see.
They were trying to bring it to the Virtual Console. All kinds of fans have been pushing for online petitions, everything, and they're like, no, we're not going to do it because that's their mess and they can deal with it.
So, if you can't remember, I'll just go ahead and say what I've been playing. I went to the Grey Whale, which is a secondhand store down the street near where I live. I picked up the 8-bit cartridge of the first Ninja Turtles game. The one where you switch in between the turtles.
Yes.
Basically, all the turtles have the same skill set except for the reach of their weapons. And that's about the only difference. You basically only get 4 lives. And sometimes I could barely make it. I mean, I played it through the first area, which is you rescue April, and then you, you save the dam from being exploded. And I couldn't be bothered to play it after that because very few times I got through with all 4 turtles, and they don't refill your lives after you complete a level. Yeah, they go, okay, they're at the very end, and they would go up and they would knock on the door and Splinter's not there, and Shredder comes on the TV, ha ha ha, turtles, you have to come to my lair.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, that's okay. It's like, I don't think, like, you can keep him. I'm gonna play something else now. But what gets me about that game is that, I mean, it is good, it's fun, but it's really difficult. I mean, you have to do everything kind of perfectly. And the rewards really aren't that great. And when you save April, she takes Splinter's place in the pause menu.
Mm-hmm.
And she says dumbass things. Like, don't let the Foot Clan destroy the dam. You have my support. It's like, really, April? Like, don't break a nail or anything. Don't feel compelled to help in any way.
Maybe what it was is it was cut off, and they meant to say support Brawl.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, you know what? Hey, speaking of Ninja Turtles, the only other game I've been playing other than that is I was playing Punch-Out for a while. Yeah, that's something else. I was basically playing Ninja Turtles Punch-Out, and as always, I'm playing either Mario All-Stars or Mario 2. I found the video for the old Ninja Turtles TV show that we all grew up watching, and that for some reason the creators hate. But the thing is, like, it was a very concise intro, like a theme song. Like, it tells you, okay, here's who the turtles are, here's who there's roles, here are the supporting characters, bam, let's go. The thing is, I remember that about April is that there was some pretty good animation going on there for the late 80s, I think. Like, when you compare it to some stuff like Masters of the Universe at that time, which was, when we were young, it looked pretty awesome, but when you look at it now, the animation kind of looks like garbage.
Oh, yeah.
But Ninja Turtles looks really, really good, and there's a scene where the turtles are flying into the sky somehow, like, out of their van, and they cut to a shot of April looking at the camera, and the turtles are in the rearview mirror. April's looking pretty hot right there for a news reporter who wears a yellow jumpsuit for some reason. It's just like, was that April's only function in the first Ninja Turtles? Was to just be a reporter? Like, she didn't do anything else?
Well, she was sort of a liaison. She was supposed to go ahead and be a sort of supporting character.
Right.
But she wasn't, like, a badass character. She wasn't, like, you know, a badass like female. Yeah. She wasn't even up to the She-Ra level.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, speaking of that, I just watched the most recent Ninja Turtles movie, the one that came out in 2007. April's like a ninja now. Like, she gave up reporting. And
what?
Splinter had trained her to be a ninja. No, but she's also some kind of badass archaeologist, too. So she's basically like Captain Picard in The Next Generation. She does all all this other stuff, but also has time to be like this Indiana Jones of space, yeah, of the Ninja Turtles universe, which I kind of guess is a way for the writers to kind of like, you know, give her something else to do. But with the characters we grew up with in Ninja Turtles that are in the video game, which is how I'm going to justify this remaining in the podcast, Rocksteady and Bebop and April O'Neil and Casey Jones. April and Casey Jones are still around, but guys like Baxter Stockman and Krang and like a whole bunch of other villains that we're familiar with, the writers, like the current group of writers for the Ninja Turtles comics and the movies, they've already kind of like killed them all off and they don't deal with them. And in some of the newer video games, they have a bunch of people that you never heard of. Like Shredder's daughter is now running the Foot, and like you don't get to play Shredder because Shredder is dead, and you don't get to play any of the characters that we liked and grew up with. So if you want to like get those guys, you have to go back to those first two games, because even in some of the Super Nintendo Ninja Turtles games, Rocksteady, Bebop, Baxter Stockman, Casey Jones, those guys aren't there. They're just not. Yeah.
Well, they were there in, are you talking about the Teenage Ninja Turtles for the Turtles in Time one, or?
No, not Turtles in Time. I'm talking about, well, Casey Jones was in that movie. I'm talking about like the video game.
Oh, yeah.
And the movies, because the writers decided that, oh, we don't like this thing that's made us this multi-million dollar franchise and is the reason we're so damn popular. So we're just gonna not associate ourselves with anything that was symbolic of that series. So we're gonna create a bunch of new crap that nobody wants to deal with.
You mean basically from 2000 on?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, because the Super Nintendo stuff, I got the impression...
Super Nintendo stuff. There's this Super Nintendo cartridge. I didn't mean to cut you off. Well, I guess I did, but I didn't want to be rude about it. There's like a tournament edition fighter. Mm-hmm. I think there's one for the Sega Genesis or this Mega CD or whatever the hell it was, that the equivalent to the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Tournament Fighters on the Sega one has all the guys that we're familiar with. But the guys on the Super Nintendo, it's like some kind of crazy... I can't even describe it because I can't remember. It's like, who are these people?
Yeah, really until 2000, I played... pretty much all the Turtles games. I even owned the original Turtles. I got to the Technodrome several times, but then I'd totally get lost and just get all my Turtles killed at that point.
In the Technodrome. Is Krang there? Someone told me that Krang was there. I'm like, I don't know if I believe you.
I don't remember, because I did beat it on an emulator, I want to say maybe 5 years ago. Because
Krang doesn't seem like he would be someone who would be in the game. Is Baxter Stockman in that game? Because I only played all the way through Ninja Turtles 2, which was more based on the TV series.
Yeah, I don't think Baxter makes an appearance at all, which is weird because the Mousers are all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Baxter Stockman, he's huge. I mean, like, I think he might be past Shredder and the Foot and the Dimension X guys. I think Baxter Stockman might be the next villain that's like right there.
You know?
Because the Foot and Dimension X, they kind of like merged into one. I really don't know why they did that.
Yeah. I also read a lot of the comics back in the day. That was some fun stuff.
I wouldn't know how to get comics and, you know, except to like subscribe to them, and my parents would never let me subscribe to comics when I was a kid from Utah. So, I mean, like, I missed out on a lot of comics stuff as a kid, but I've done a lot of research and got a lot of back issues and stuff, a lot of collections.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've kind of got caught up because I feel like I missed out on all that great stuff. But what can you do?
Still think my favorite Turtles game, I mean, the original one was good, but it was, like, weird. It wasn't until later that I was like, what does this have to do with the cartoon beyond...
Well, I mean, even the box art, they had the comic book art on it because you have everybody in the red masks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the first one really is more based off the comic book. Because Ninja Turtles 2 was released that same year later because the arcade game was getting such good reception. I think I was looking at both and they said copyright 1989.
Yeah, it was weird, too, because there's a lot of inconsistencies about when the Turtles arcade game came out. Because some sources say 90, some sources say 89. So I don't know if it was, like, some sources are citing maybe the European version versus the USA version or something. I don't know, but...
Because I got the USA for both of these, and I can tell you right now they both saying 89 on the copyright screen.
Yeah, it's real weird. That made it really hard doing that Brawler of the Year thing, because I'm like, what?
It's like, wait a minute, my head is supposed to be Final Fantasy VI in the United States, but it's Final Fantasy III in Japan. Mm-hmm. Something was happening, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why they did that. Oh, well.
I know why. That's actually really simple.
Because they didn't want to release a bunch of craziness. Oh, let me guess. The usual thing Japan thinks we're dumb, so they only send us, like, the simplest ones, or the ones they think will go over really, really well.
Well, here's the thing. The original Final Fantasy, you probably know this, it was technically supposed to be Square's last game.
Really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they weren't doing well. They had made Rad Racer, 3D World Runner, a couple other things, and they were starting to flop. So, just as a whim, they made Final Fantasy, and the reason they called it Final Fantasy, they assumed it was going to be their last game.
And it turned out to be one of the most, not only their flagship series, but one of the most iconic, I would say probably in the top 10, if not the top 5, video game series in the history of the industry.
What's interesting is, so it was pretty good in America, but not quite what they expected, but it was a major hit in Japan. So since, you know, Japan was eating it up, they're like, okay, well, we want to release some sequels, but doesn't really seem like it's going over well with the American audience. Meanwhile, Enix is going, yeah, okay, whatever. We're going to keep on releasing Dragon Warrior over here too, so.
Squeenix, those
right.
guys.
Yeah. That was the weirdest part. It was like, okay, so Enix made Dragon Quest, well, Dragon Warrior 1 through 4 on the Nintendo, but then skipped 5 and 6 for the Super Nintendo. Why did that happen? And it's like, well, no, they finally picked up on, oh yeah, it's not really selling. Square was like, nah, it's not really selling. Yeah, but they wanted to try again with Final Fantasy IV, so they did, and it did do well, but the problem is that...
Didn't do good enough, yeah, I don't think.
It's not even that. With 5, they had a cross-dressing character.
See, I never finished 5. Yeah. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so boring, what's going on?
Well... It was that, and if I understand correctly, because I watched my brother play most of it, I need to actually go through and beat it myself, but...
I have no interest in playing Final Fantasy V. I'm not even gonna pretend that I do.
I do, specifically because I like the job class system they have going on there. It's pretty interesting.
They did very well with tactics, I thought. I thought that was a good move. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool because, you know, you had this job system, you could change the jobs around really well and all this. But the problem is, it was real weird throwing in a cross-dressing character. And then there was like, it was when Squaresoft was first trying to be funny. So there was a lot of stuff that was like, kind of weird. Like,
you think some Americans are weird? Go to Tokyo Narita Airport, just in the airport, and look around at some of the crazy shit they have.
Yeah.
You'll be like, exactly. What is going on here? And there's also, the Japanese are also very fond of puns. And so a lot of stuff gets lost in the translation, yep. As far as all that goes.
That's why whenever I was playing Final Fantasy VI, I laughed at it because I was a kid, but I look back on it now and I'm like, this is just sappy as shit. I mean, it was fun at the time, but I think that's the major reason why they cut it, because there were really only 5 main characters.
In 5?
Yeah, in 5. So I was like, that's kind of dumb. But on top of that, it was like, the major thing it has going for it is the job system, and beyond that, it doesn't really fall back on much. The plot kind of falls flat. There's a lot of puns in it that really fall flat, too. Even with the online translation versus the official translation, is still kind of like, eh.
Right, the dialogue to make it.
Yeah. But that's why there was such a weird-ass jump, because they were originally calling it Final Fantasy IV when they were planning on making it for the Nintendo Ultra 64.
You mean that thing?
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much goofy crap Nintendo tried to do that I remember, like, reading about and hearing about all this crazy shit that they wanted to do that they never did.
Yeah.
And even the stuff that they did do, which we're going to talk about later or something, I won't bring it up now, but, like, the Power Glove. Remember that thing?
Yes.
What the heck was that about?
I don't know. I even look at it today, even if you dismiss the whole Angry Video Game Nerd episode where he's actually able to land Top Gun, you know.
I mean, I don't want to derail it too much. I could never stand that guy, the Angry Video Game Nerd. I just wanted to punch him in his face. So I was it's like, oh, shut up. But I've heard he's mellowed out recently. And that's just, you know, from growing up and, you know, realizing that life's not all bad and stuff. And mellow out because you have to. But anyway, go ahead. Whenever there's a reference to the Angry Video Game Nerd, I'm probably not going to know what you're talking about.
I got you. Actually, you're right. He has mellowed out, which is why I'm kind of like...
Semi-annoyed, yeah, thing.
Yeah, that's why lately I'm kind of like, because he'll release an episode, mm-hmm. and it'll be informational, but mm-hmm. it won't be that funny. It won't be as over the top as it used to be.
Right. Well, I mean, that stuff, that's good for a while, but people keep up that level of, like, they turn into self-parodies at some point. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I think he probably recognizes that and be like, you know what, maybe I should grow up sometime.
I don't know.
But what can you do? Anyway, you were saying about a Power Glove.
Oh, I never personally used it. It was real big in, like, The Wizard. It's like, the Power Glove, it's so bad. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's so bad. Why the hell would I ever wear that? You're going to go ahead and basically only have one hand to control the video game now. How does this peripheral help you at all? It's worse than the robot thing.
So it wasn't like the Wiimote? It wasn't some kind of... Well, then what good is it?
If I understand correctly, certain games did have special functionality, but it was like literally only a select few games that had something. It was like you had to program it or do some... And again, I never had a Power Glove, so I'm just, you know...
I never had a Power Glove. Yeah.
I think one of the best accessories that has just carried on and carried on and carried on was the light gun. And then the power... Yeah, the zapper. Well, that makes sense, though, because they were doing that kind of stuff in the arcades before they made the Nintendo anyway. So.
I always wondered how that worked. I never... Because it didn't have a sensor thing. I always wondered, how does it know where I'm shooting?
Well, what it is, you notice how the screen always flashes.
Yeah.
The reason why is if you look real close, like the birds in Duck Hunt, whenever the screen flashes, there's an outline around the ducks, like a little square around the ducks. that flashes with it, and basically it's reading where it's calibrated and everything, like where it's actually flashing toward. I don't know if it's like an LED per se or what have you.
There's got to be something going on underneath the screen that I don't know about, yeah.
But yeah, basically what it is it's like the screen flashes deliberately so that it can go ahead and pick up on if you're actually pointed at a target, and if you are, then it hits the target.
Yeah, I think Duck Hunt would be more entertaining now to play on the Wii, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly. But anyway, we got away from, I was going to bring up the wizard, but we were talking about Final Fantasy, and I went off on the Power Glove, but I knew something about Final Fantasy IV for the Ultra 64, and we got off on all these crazy peripherals that Nintendo was always trying to do.
Oh, that's the only reason the numbering got changed as far as Final Fantasy. That's why it was like 1, 2, 3, 7. Wait.
That's right, it was 7, that's right.
Yeah, because they were going to call it 4, and then they were just like, you know what, we're with a new company, fuck you guys.
Yeah, it's like, we're with Sony now.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo lost a lot of third-player support in the jump to PlayStation, you know, which is good and bad, but, you know, it is what it is.
The major reason for that, Nintendo both saved and hurt the industry with the seal of approval thing. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't, actually, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh. Okay.
I was waiting for you, Blaine, and to impart your great knowledge unto me, so I can shut up for a few minutes. So go ahead.
It's all good. Okay, basically, and I learned about this in college, which is great. Yeah, almost any time I got the chance, I was like, let's do a speech. Okay, on what? Video games. Yeah.
This guy again.
They had that video game crash in the 80s after basically everybody and their brother was making bullshit games for the Atari. It was just copies of copies of copies.
Oh, that sounds a lot like WiiWare.
Pretty much. The problem is it was unregulated. Anybody could make anything they wanted. You know, adult games were in abundance and such.
Leisure Suit Larry.
Well, no, I mean, there are good adult games, but yeah. Basically, what happened was it was causing the whole video game crash. It was getting ridiculous. You know, you'd pay full price for a game that you've played 5 times, Gears of War. But, yeah, so Nintendo wanted to do this, you know, seal of quality, seal of approval.
That
you know,
wizard guy, remember that.
Yeah, we personally check every game. That's what led to some companies, basically like minor companies, getting swallowed up in the Nintendo franchise. There were some that really were their products, like Zelda or Mario or what have you. But then there's other stuff like Kid Icarus and different stuff. It's not really used, but it got absorbed into Nintendo, so it's technically their property. And they had a sort of, like, non-disclosure thing where, oh, no, you only make stuff for Nintendo. That's why, like, for the longest time, Capcom didn't make anything for the Sega.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then, Capcom, when they told Nintendo to go screw themselves. Capcom and Konami. I think those are the three big ones in the big jump from Nintendo to Sony. You lost three huge staples of the video game industry. You lost Mega Man, you lost Castlevania, and Final Fantasy. It's like, you know, we're going to these guys who've got better technology. Well, let us do what we want to do.
Well, basically what happened was, like, there was even this rivalry going on where Capcom made Final Fight, and then they went ahead and ported it to the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So then Sega's like, oh shit, we got to get on something. So they made Streets of Rage. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they already had Golden Axe, but they made Streets of Rage to try to, you know, combat the actual Final Fight thing. Okay. They went back and forth with that for a while, but finally what happened was Capcom did bring some stuff over to the Sega, like in the Twilight years, that kind of thing. They did, like, Mega Man the Wily Wars, where it was like a remake.
Yeah, one through three. They did, like, they gave 1 through 3, like, the Mario All-Star stream. It looks really good. Mm-hmm. I've seen some screenshots of it. It looks pretty good. You see Mega Man fighting Quick Man. You're like, holy crap, that looks awesome. How come we couldn't get that on the Super Nintendo?
Well, also what they did is, and this is kind of weird, it was only like 2 games, but Konami did come over. They might have made more than just 2, but they did Contra Hardcores, which is the Contra that I call the impossible Contra. Okay, harder than
Contras.
I mean, Contra can be tough in general, but even Contra Shattered Soldier, I was still able to muscle through with time and patience. With Contra Hardcores, I was like, so you're giving me 9 lives, and I'm expending them all just to get to the first checkpoint. That's not good. So, yeah, it's just crazy. But the other one was Castlevania Bloodlines, which it was a more, like, classic Castlevania, but it was, like, it was 16-bit, kind of like, you know, the whole Castlevania 4.
Yeah, Castlevania 4.
It didn't have the whole, like, whipping in all directions kind of thing.
Ah.
Yeah, it was still pretty cool, though. It had a lot of great effects and everything to it. That's one you don't really hear a whole lot about anymore, which is kind of sad.
The Castlevania canon, those guys, they retcon everything. They're, like, worse than George Lucas, like, with the way that they just change everything. Be like, okay, this really happened here. So they're really just kind of altering the backstory to fit the most current game they're making. But at least they do that, as opposed to Zelda, which I think is kind of good on Zelda's part. Let's be like, you know what? Screw it. We're just going to say a bunch of stuff that happened now and enjoy. It's like, have fun.
Mm-hmm. Everyone has amnesia, except for sometimes.
Yeah. Be like, I stopped trying. In fact, wasn't there an episode of WonderPod where Scruffy posted that question? Why do video game nerds get all frickin' bothered about the continuity of the Zelda games? And it's ultimately like, who gives a damn?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in college. Somebody had posted, I think it was like 2001, 2002 maybe, trying to make sense of the order of the Zelda games.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. Well,
why do that to yourself?
Problem is, I was looking, I was going, you know, that doesn't make sense because it's such an epic series. Is there an order? Because you've got some where it's like Kid Link, you've got some where it's Adult Link, then you've got some where you can't really tell because it's 8-bit or 16-bit, so it's like, okay, where does this one fit in? Then you got Wind Waker, which isn't even Link at all, technically.
I think they're supposed to be, like, all different Links or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's one theory that I've bandied about. I figured this out when I was doing research for that massive Ultimate Mario Kart thing, and I was, like, doing research, and I wanted to put a Zelda track. Ultimately settled with the Temple of Time in Hyrule Castle Town. Just kind of, like, have it around there. That's where most iconic Zelda stuff is. But I came upon this page in the Zelda wiki about the chronology, and there's, like, so many theories. Apparently, after Ocarina of Time, there was some kind of weird split. This crazy alternate universe was created, and the Wind Waker reality with Spirit Tracks and was there. And then after that, Twilight Princess was another reality or something. It just got, come on, guys. This is like, what? Nintendo obviously doesn't give a shit about continuity.
They even tried to say, oh, you know, like that one time in Zelda 2 when you're on the raft and you take it to the other side of the river. Basically what happens, they don't show it in that game, but in Zelda, you know, the one for the Game Boy where you crash on the island and everything. Yeah, you were on that raft and then you crashed on the island. You just didn't remember it because you had amnesia.
So they're trying to say that Oracle of Seasons or Link to the Past or whichever one, they're trying to say that one of the Zelda games for the Game Boy took place inside the game of the Adventure of Link.
Right. Yeah.
What?
Exactly.
Come on.
Well, I think the only reason why they start doing that is because, you know, very few of them actually took place on the same console, at least with the same style. You know, you got Wind Waker and you got Twilight Princess. You know, you got Zelda 1, Zelda 2 even that are totally different.
You kind of have that in the Mario universe as well, in a way, because the only Mario games that are in the same style on the same console would have to be the first Mario and Lost Levels and Mario Galaxy and Mario Galaxy 2, which I wasn't really all that thrilled with Mario Galaxy 2. It's just like, I thought they were going to come at us with something new, but it ended up being a pain in the ass and I didn't finish it, so. But
I still need to get that one.
If you played the first Mario Galaxy, there's no reason to play the second one.
Mm.
It's basically all the stuff from Mario Galaxy is happening again, only Peach is much dumber this time. We forgot all of this already happened. Oh, and Yoshi's nice. Here for some reason. If you're going to use my recommendation, I say, if you've played Mario Galaxy, there's no reason to play Mario Galaxy 2. You want to move on to the... didn't G have a question for us, Spaceman G?
He did. We're not going to have a really awesome intro.
Yeah, like you guys have on WonderPod, because we suck.
It's because it's back in the 80s and he doesn't have recording software yet.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
He sent us a tape. He sent us a letter. We're going to put it on Stillcam.
Yes. Breakdancer Man G has sent us a question, and it says, gimmick-based games or other media products as a result of our youth. You know, like the Noid from Domino's Pizza or Spot from 7-Up, mascots getting games or games inspiring bizarre products. And I do remember playing a couple of these.
I remember hearing about them and seeing them, and I'm thinking, like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I know there was a 7-Up game for the Nintendo. I never got a chance to play it. It was one of those, you know, four-person multi-tap games. Okay. I did get to play one for the Super Nintendo, which was the Cool Spot game. It was done by Virgin, so it had really awesome animation. It was nothing special. It could have been anything. Anything at all. It just happened to be a corporate logo.
Kind of like what we were talking about last time with the Back to the Future game.
Yeah.
A little bit like that.
It wasn't even that because, I mean, it wasn't exactly based off of anything in particular, just a corporate mascot. It was like, yeah.
He's here to drink your Ovaltine.
What does the Cool Spot do exactly? What is his motivation for going through these? Like, what is he doing? What's his goal? What is he trying to accomplish? Well, that doesn't matter. You're just trying to get points. Well, that doesn't really matter because I want to know why.
Yeah, kind of like, I have an example of that. It might not be exactly like, get it spaced off a movie. I didn't even know it was a movie until like super recently, like maybe even this week. And I was like, that's a movie? And there was this game called Little Nemo the Dream Master.
Oh, yeah.
First level, you run up to this guy's apparently running around in his pajamas. It's like, we're in your dreams. Oh, by the way, my name is Flip. Okay, bye, Flip. You're like, go through this crazy, you're like trying to jump over frogs and mushrooms and shit. You can like change like a gopher into like a frog. Like, yeah, there's different suits around in each level. It's kind of a difficult game.
Yes.
What you're doing, you're never quite clear on it, because I don't even think the instruction booklet explained it. And I bring that up in this because, like, it's not like 7-Up or the Noid, the Mr. like Spot, but I just saw that it was this weekend, actually. I was looking over on Amazon Instant Video because I was looking for some movies to rent so I could play the riff tracks, the Mystery Science Theater tracks on them.
Yes.
And I saw Little Nemo the Dream Master, and it's like, I had the same cover art as the box art. Like, that's a video game. And I was like, that's a movie? Are you serious? It's like, do you want to rent it? Nah. It's like, I'll probably just have episodes of this terrible game that I was never able to beat as a child. Can you think of any others besides Spot and the Noid? Now, I remember the Noid was this huge deal for Domino's for a long time. And I think there might have even have been, in fact, I know there was, some video games, maybe even computer games for, like, McDonald Land, where, like, you're Ronald McDonald, and you're, like, you go see the Hamburglar, and you go see, like, Mayor McCheese and Grimace and Early Bird and all these people. I'm fairly certain there's a video game for that. We have to go get a Happy Meal. But other than that, I can't really think of any others. I'm sure they were there. Are there any others for you that, like, jump to mind immediately?
Well, the one you're referring to is MC Kids for the NES.
Yeah.
It was almost like Mario, but it had a Ronald McDonald theme, and there were a couple of other Ronald McDonald games, too, like one for the Genesis, I think, even.
In that NES game, wasn't there one Caucasian child, and the other one was, like, ethnic? So they could be like, hey, everybody. It's, yeah, like, multicultural.
Mm-hmm. This is McDonald's.
McDonald's, yeah. Weird Mac. Yeah. Yo, what is up, bitches?
Oh, you were talking about Little Nemo. There was actually a cartoon, like, in the paper, like a newspaper cartoon of Little Nemo.
Like,
yeah, like, way, way back.
Dick Tracy, kind of.
I want to say maybe right around the same time of Dick Tracy, actually. There was that, and then I can't remember if they made the game first. The movie you're referring to, it's like an anime. I watched it whenever I was a little kid. It's okay. I mean, it's very loosely based off the comic strip, from what I can gather, but basically, the comic strip is just, it's this kid that he can't really seem to get to sleep, and it has like LSD dreams and shit, and it's like, okay,
that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of crazy LSD dreams, this will give us a good transition into the other topic we were going to want to talk about, which you said you wanted to discuss earlier, and that was why virtual technology never really took off after the Virtual Boy came and kind of sank. Kind of just like, just go into like what you were thinking about that.
Oh, okay. You mean now?
Yeah, now. I was giving you a segue, man.
Yes. Okay, so I was thinking the other day, as far as virtual reality, you know, for the longest time, especially in the 90s, they kept on saying, holy shit, you know, you get to go ahead and put this monitor on your face, and you play the game with your arms or some weird shit. And,
yeah, like,
and
you actually feel it. It's like you're really there.
Yeah, you're like in a new world, and oh, and you get to do all this stuff, and that's great.
And then suddenly it kind of fell off.
I don't even remember what year it happened. I want to guess maybe 97, 98, something like that. It was gone. It went away. It was like quicker than disco. Just went, it's gone.
Gone. Yeah, no one talks
about it. It was like real big, and then it was just gone.
Everyone was just talking about it. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
If I had to guess what was bringing that on, there was this little tiny, little known television show at the time called Star Trek The Next Generation. And in this tiny, inconsequential show, they had this little thing called the holodeck, where you would go in on this big, massively armed warship, and you'd take your robot friend with you, and you would put on little Shakespearean plays and match wits with Olo Moriarty and stuff. And the same kind of people who were into that show were also big into developing technology and writing about technology like that. If I had to stab a guess at it, I would think that when they realized, oh shit, we have no idea how to do that, it kind of like disappeared really quickly.
Maybe. I don't know. To this day, I still wonder about it, because I look at it and I go, you know, it was really big really quick. There was even a Power Rangers knockoff called VR Troopers, and I know this because I used to watch it and think, that's awesome! They're doing the same thing the Power Rangers are doing, but virtually.
Virtual world, like the Matrix or something.
Something. Not realizing they're in another Matrix.
That was another show that was kind of like that. No, wait, I'm wrong. I was thinking about Captain N, but we're not going to talk about that.
Oh, no, Captain N was awesome.
I saw the intro for it. I saw, like, the Mega Man they used and the Simon Belmont and, like, the kid with the Nintendo letter jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool back then. It was fun to watch with the Mario cartoons and the Zelda cartoons that they had going on back then. And even they had like a short-lived comic book series where they had three comic titles. They had Mario, they had Zelda, and they had Captain N.
Yes,
but look at you. If you go back and you look at it, and if you were like 10 years old in 1990 and you're 30 years old in 2011, you go back, you look at that, and you're like really embarrassed for yourself. You're just like, oh my gosh, really? The greatest gamer in all the lands. He gets sucked into his TV and has his little controller for a belt, and this scantily clad princess is like all over him and stuff. Mother Brain has kidnapped the king, but we can't be bothered to actually go save the king. We're just gonna...
Oh yeah, but his controller belt, he could use it to pause time.
That was really its only function. Was it?
I think pretty much.
Yeah.
He had a zapper.
Yeah, he had a zapper too. Was the zapper orange or gray? I think it was orange.
Yeah, it was orange.
Yeah, it was an original.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a power glove? That seems like that would be one of the crazy things that he would have. Oh, I think they might have had a Little Mac episode where they had that.
I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Thank God.
Halfway through its life cycle, they introduce the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, where he, like, comes up. He's, like, this disembodied thing. And he has a face, and he, like, takes the form of a Game Boy.
Yeah.
And he comes up, and he, like, slithers along, like, hi, I'm Game Boy. Here is your next challenge, or whatever.
He was, like, an asshole. I was
was he?
What's up with that? The first episode he was there, it was an actual Game Boy. He just started messing with him for some reason. Put him into random worlds and made him do random crap. And I was like, why is Game Boy an asshole?
They would take characters and then make them behave the way you wouldn't think the characters would. Like, Mega Man was this panicky little half-wit coward.
Well, like, Simon Belmont was, like, super like prissy, and I'm like...
Like, oh, I'm like,
there's a dude...
Go kill Dracula.
He's barely wearing anything. He's, like, a barbarian of sorts, and he's, like, wielding a whip that's holy or some crap and beating the crap out of every monster ever.
Yeah, they made him some... Like, oh, I'm Simon Belmont. Mm-hmm. Like, he's from the Upper West Side. Or the Upper East Side, right? Wherever the hell the rich people live in New York.
The Upper British
side. I don't care. Yeah, you know.
Something.
And they kind of did the same thing with Link. In the second season, when they merged the Zelda worlds and the Captain N world, they kind of portrayed Link as this stumbling buffoon. That was like this big joke in Hyrule. I'm like, he's the hero. These people worship Link. He was more like the Link from Wand of Gamelion than from, like, what you would imagine him in any other Zelda title.
I sure hope I get to fight some Dodongos.
No guys. By the blast of Dodongos, Impa, Link is probably dead too. Let's go and save.
Mm-hmm.
2 months have passed, Link. Go walk to your certain death. Okay. And then they had Samus Aran when they brought in her, and they made her kind of this foil for Princess Lana or whoever it was to compete for Kevin's affection. I'm remembering a lot more about this than I really would like to admit. Oh, yeah. But in the comics, I remember the comics, it was kind of limited because Valiant, which was who did their comics, they did the Mario ones. Mario was kind of like Archie a little bit.
Yeah.
And Captain N was more of an adventure thing where they go into like different, but they could only go into Nintendo-owned games. And I didn't realize this at the time because Nintendo was kind of all there was except for Sega. They could only go into Nintendo worlds, so they could really only use characters that were owned by Nintendo.
Yeah.
And like Capcom and Konami had only given Nintendo the rights to portray Simon Belmont and Mega Man in the TV series. Valiant didn't have those rights. So Simon Belmont and Mega Man were absent. Like, they weren't there. And so, like, Mega Man's story's responsibilities kind of, like, absorbed into Pit, Kid Icarus. They called him Kid Icarus in the TV show, but, you know, that doesn't matter. It was a lot more Metroid theme, I remember, in the comic books. They dealt a lot with Metroid lore, because I think that was really the only thing the writers really get a grip on before the canceled. They didn't do very many comics. I remember they might have done 3 or 4 Mario comics, 3 or 4 Zeldas, the same for Captain N, and 1, like, big Mega collection. But they didn't do very more after that.
Yeah.
So anyway, was that it? Did you want to say anything else about virtual reality?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about the virtual boy a bit.
Yeah, let's do that. Totally do that. Sorry, I got excited about Captain.
Oh, that's okay. Did you ever own the Virtual Boy?
I didn't. I had a friend named Randy Mitchell. And
Randy Mitchell.
Yes, look him up on Facebook. Stalk him, everybody. He lives in Far West. Randy's a good guy. But he had a Virtual Boy, and I remember, I think we were in high school when he had it. And one night, I think we were watching, like, we were watching a jazz game, or, like, we were watching Deep Space Nine together or something. And I remember looking at it, I'm like, and it was like Mario Brothers was on it. But it was different. It was like some kind of weird new Donkey Kong level with Mario and Luigi in it. It was terrible. You have to like put your eye into this thing, and then you have this little tiny controller, and it's just nothing but like a red lines, like, you know, all these vector things. And it's like, that's the only Virtual Boy I've ever seen, and that's the only Virtual game I ever played, and I really didn't care. I was not that impressed with it at all. What about you?
Now, I actually owned it. I want to say I had probably 10 games for it. I picked it up once it started tanking, because literally it was like, I want to say $100, $200 whenever it first came out.
Like $200.
Yeah, because they were banking on
the novelty of it.
Yeah, the alleged success of virtual reality in general. I did play a couple of virtual reality games in the arcade. They were like $5 a piece.
Yeah, screw that.
Yeah.
Well, where you had, like, standing there and they're, like, blowing air at you.
It was fun, but I looked at it now and I go, really?
How much $5 was back then?
Well, it wasn't even that. I was looking at it and I was going, you know, this was in an arcade where the most expensive game was, you know, maybe 75 cents.
Right. Ultimate and Combat 3. Sorry, go ahead.
Or a Neo Geo game or something.
Yeah.
But, and I'm looking at it and I'm going, really, it had the graphical equivalence of just below a PS1. So I'm thinking maybe, like, you know, Super FX chip on the Super Nintendo or something. Well, it did have a, you know, a gyroscope and everything, because they had like a little gun that you held and you were able to like look around and fire and things of that nature. It was still really weird because it was like, I didn't know that I was allowed to look around. Plus the helmet was heavy, you know, just cumbersome.
I think this had to have been pre Nintendo 64, wouldn't it? Before the concept of three-dimensional video games was, you know, that kind of blew everybody's mind when Mario 64 came out.
I want to say it was like 95 or 96, something like that. Basically, you know, the Virtual Boy came out, and I was like, oh, that's awesome, da-da-da. I was like, $200, well, I really can't afford that. And then not even like a year later, it's down to $20.
Because they were trying to get rid of them because it was...
Yeah, so
I
picked it up, and I picked up a crap load of games for it at Toys R Us. I mean, it was fun, but it defeated the purpose of it being a Virtual Boy. I'm like, this could have been, you know, a Game Boy, and it would have been fine.
Right.
There were two gimmicks. One was, it was a virtual reality helmet, but it was so goddamn heavy, you had to have a little stand and put it on a desk. Yeah, you couldn't like
you
have
had
a little
to sit
strap.
Down. Yeah,
either that or you had to like lay down and put it on your face. So there was that. You had to have a controller attached to it. So it wasn't really virtual reality. It was just, I have a Game Boy on my face.
People were like, what are you doing down there? Playing for you. Why don't you
when
just
it was,
play on the TV, it'll be easier.
It was like red and black, and because it was right on your face, they tried to go ahead and make it as dark as possible instead of, you know, making it as bright as possible. So, okay, you know how in, like, some art classes they would have it where you would have the black, like, velvet, whatever it was?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and you would, like, make bright colors on it. It kind of looked like that. Except they tried to make it 3D where they were using, like, different panels and tricks with the different lenses that were in there to where certain things were farther away or closer, which that was kind of cool.
They might be able to, like, maybe with the Wii, we were talking about how Nintendo did these crazy peripheries, they might be able to get away with doing something like that now and do it right.
Yeah. Well, they are the 3DS.
Is that... Really? Is that what that is? Well,
what it is, it's some kind
of... I just thought it was like the next Game Boy.
They're doing some kind of 3D technology. I don't understand how it works exactly. Glazinator and Patman have them. It's something where...
Well, those guys have them.
Well, yeah. But it's something where if it's tilted right and you got it in the sweet spot and everything, it has a 3D effect to it.
Oh, really?
You know, without the glasses. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool, but...
Can I help?
The problem is that it's like, it is, but it isn't backwards compatible because you can play DS games on them, but they look like crap.
So basically is not. It's basically...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm,
Mario, I can't play 6 Golden Coins anymore, which is one of the best Mario games. I don't care what anybody says. Coins was...
Mario
think,
Land 2?
Yeah, Mario Land 2, yeah.
That was a fun one.
I thought that was better than Mario World, but, you know, I always get booed out of forums. People compare me to Hitler when I say that.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, see...
I mean, it was
I'm not saying I don't like Mario World. I do. I guess not better. I guess I just liked it more because I played it more back then.
Oh, I got you.
What can you do? Personal taste. I mean, I play the hell out of Mario World. So.
Oh, yeah. When it came to the Virtual Boy, you know, here's the thing. There were some games that was like, why does it need to be in 3D? Like Galactic Pinball. I'm like, why does it need to be in 3D? It's not impressive. It's not interesting. Who cares?
Oh, like, have you ever been like, you know, when they want to like do the point of view, mm-hmm. I don't know if they have it for pinball, like the point of view of the pinball or something like equally as insane. It's like, how can you control what the hell you're doing if the movement is that intense?
Well, here's the thing. It didn't actually do anything. It was just a straight pinball table. They they didn't do anything interesting with it. It was just
they didn't even try that. Okay.
No, it was a pinball table, but they tried to use the different planes or whatever to make it more 3D, but I'm like, okay, but all I'm doing is looking at a fucking pinball table. It doesn't matter.
3D solitaire.
Yeah, exactly.
So as you can see the dealer like pass them to you and stuff.
3D watching a guy play Warcraft. I don't know.
Now,
you know?
The thing is, as far as like, you know, virtual reality and the Wii, Nintendo's taken a step in the right direction, I think, with Wii Sports, in particular with Wii Bowling. I think that best that we can be practically expected from a game that tries to simulate a real-world activity like that. So I think that, particularly with Wii Bowling, I think Nintendo took this huge step in the right direction. I actually think Wii Bowling is probably, I would say, one of the best sports games, but it's definitely one of the best programs that Nintendo's done, as far as like just pure, holy crap. Basically, the only thing you're missing is the ball in your hand. I think it kind of perfectly replicates the experience of bowling without having to go out and sit next to a bunch of ugly people while you bowl.
Well, that and I can actually hit strikes every so often.
Yeah,
so
I know. I went ahead and pulled up a list of Virtual Boy games on Wikipedia, so I might be missing some. English language games, they have 3D Tetris.
Yep.
Galactic Pinball is what you were talking about.
Yep.
Golf, which I really don't get, unless it was...
I avoided that, yeah.
Jack Brothers, what the hell was that?
That is the most rare Virtual Boy game.
What is it?
Well, okay.
Oh, it's a crazy Pac-Man monster.
Actually,
it's
you know what it is? Are you familiar with the Pyro Jack and Jack Frost from the Shin Megami Tensei series?
It sounds like I should know what they are, but this does look really familiar. Yep.
It's the same characters that are in Persona and a couple of other Atlas titles. That's why it's so goddamn rare. They didn't make very many copies in America because it was pretty much when the Virtual Boy was dying down, and I have no idea what the fuck it's about, but I've seen a copy in this local video game store for like $129.
Yes. Well, I'm not that in.
Exactly.
So you gotta go ahead and keep that. Mario Clash. What's Mario? Oh, this might have been that one I was talking about. Yeah, this is it. This is the one I was talking about before. It's like Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong, only not. It's like...
Well, what it is, the original Mario Brothers game in the arcade where you had to like bonk the enemies from underneath.
It's like that.
You have to whack the turtles, get their shells, and then you can throw them left and right or in the foreground and the background. That was a really cool effect.
It seems like this would be something cool that they could do like now.
Yes. Really should reduplicate it now because that'd be kind of fun.
Mario's Tennis, which kind of surprised me because Mario Tennis, when it came out in 2001, that was like one of the, I think that might have been the best tennis game at that point.
It was really crappy for the Virtual Boy. The only real gimmick was everything's
the
64. Moving.
For the, I don't know. This is called Mario's Tennis. Mario Tennis was stellar. Did you play Mario's Tennis?
No.
Oh, okay.
I had Mario's Tennis for the Virtual Boy. It came with Virtual Boy.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, and it was the worst game ever to go ahead and show off the powers of it, because it was interesting in that, yes, it would move forward and back with whatever Mode 7 raster effects or whatever the hell it was with the 3D. That was kind of interesting, but at the same time, it, like, wasn't even as good as Star Fox. It was just all spritey and crap, so it still looked like crap and it would hurt your eyes.
Like you said, kind of like the first Star Fox. I was about to say F-Zero, but that's not really a fair comparison.
Kind of like F-Zero, but worse.
Oh,
yeah.
The first F-Zero was terrible, I thought, but...
Really?
I like the one for the 64, but my favorite one is for the GameCube. Again, that's another thing I get booed out of places for, because people complain that the one for the GameCube is too damn hard, but...
Yeah, I stopped playing after the one for the Super Nintendo, because I'm not a big racer fan anyway. I like Mario Kart. I really, really like Mario Kart. When it came to F-Zero, I was like, okay, so it's futuristic, but it's not really futuristic, because whatever.
Yeah, the only thing that's kind of bad about that I thought was, like, I really thought you should be able to, like, shoot lasers and shit at people, but you know, whatever.
Something.
F-Zero G Force or whatever it was, the one for the GameCube. It does take quite a bit. It's a very steep learning curve. Yeah, but once you got it, you got it. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, it's been deemed one of the hardest games ever, like even compared to the new Ninja Gaiden. And I'm like, okay, so I don't want to play that because I'm not a big racer fan anyway.
Okay, let's see what else we got going here. Nestor's Funky Bowling. Do I want to know what that is?
Ugh. No, I never tried it. I'm not.
This looks,
no thanks.
We already talked about how I'm like so in love with Wii Bowling. Panic Bomber.
Never played it. It's probably a derivative from the arcade, though.
Red Alarm.
That's actually pretty fun.
If I had to guess what that is, it might be something from Hunt for Red October.
No.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, it's Planes. I was totally wrong.
It was trying to be kind of a futuristic space shoot 'em up thing, but it was real weird because you could have four different camera angles. One could be like first person, one was like third person. There were a couple other ones, but the thing that threw you off but also helped, if that makes any sense, was it was all wireframe. Uh-huh. Yeah, there'd be times where you're getting ready to run into a wall and you don't know it because it doesn't have a wall there.
Oh, so it's not like Star Fox where on the battle, like, you know how they have the battle stages sometimes in Star Fox 64, yeah. Where like if you run into a wall, it'll like U-turn you back into the action.
See, that's what it should have done, but it was more like you had full control of your ship, accelerating, decelerating, reversing, and all kinds of crazy shit, almost like it was Descent.
Right.
The only cool part about it was the 3D effects were really there. I mean, it was pretty cool in that respect. It did make it very hard to maneuver because you couldn't tell if there was a wall or a ceiling or a floor or what the hell was
Because that was probably just the limitations of the technology, I'm guessing. Because
no, more like the laziness of the company.
But... Oh, I see.
They could have done something.
So what you're saying is I'm giving them too much credit.
Yeah, no, they could have at least said, wall here, something, but no, they kind of just
let it go.
The Virtual
Boy only had, like, what, two colors, red and black?
Yeah, it was kind of like the Game Boy, where it was just, like, black and white, but, you know, different varying shades.
Oh, I kind of see where, I think I see what killed this thing. Telluro Boxer, whatever, I'm guessing that's probably a fighter.
That was kind of like Punch-Out, but it was in 3D, and it was with robots.
Yeah, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
That was actually pretty fun.
Vertical Force.
Overhead shooter.
Yeah, it looks like another shooter game.
Yep.
Wario Land, that looks like it might actually have been something.
That was kind of fun because you could jump into the foreground or the background, mm-hmm. and it had a real cool little jumping effect as far as like moving him from the foreground to the background, but it was still just like, okay, it's Wario Land.
Virtual League Baseball, but I think I see what might have really killed the Virtual Boy. Waterworld, the video game. What?
Oh, they had a bunch of Waterworld video games.
Yeah, no,
they had them
for
the Super and everything. Yeah.
That might have been what killed it.
Maybe.
Yeah, so I think that's probably going to do it for Retropod episode number 2. Gunsage, go ahead and outro yourself. Like, tell us who you are, what you're about, where we can find you, and all that fun stuff.
Okay. Again, this is Gunsage, and you can find me in a bunch of different places, but specifically I'm on bythewayactually.com, wonderpodonline.com. I'm also on Destructoid. I have a blog there.
And me, I'm Dave Chadwick, a.k.a. Sugar Ray Dodge. You can find me on my website at sugarraydodge.com. I also contribute to wonderpod.com, wonderpodonline.com, and bythewayactually.com, which I kind of probably need to contribute to both those places soon eventually. New Scruffy video will be coming soon enough, and that will count as my contribution for another month.
You should do a Let's Play of Mega Man 3.
What's a Let's Play?
Oh, all you do is you play the game and you provide commentary on
it. Oh, that's right. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I know. I didn't know that that's what that was called.
Oh, okay.
Oh, kind of like Zoomeister did with Earthbound. I'm like, what the hell? But what can you do? Anyway, so I guess we'll see y'all next time. This has been Retropod. I'm SRD. That's Gunsage. And we are out of here.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Do the Mario. Do.
Oh, that's another thing. 1943. So kudos to G.
Yeah, kudos to G. Hooray!
For catching that after the 13th comment.
Because nobody wanted, because I didn't know what it was.